Construction Operation Division within DEC. With me is Jim Powell, the Deputy Director of Environmental Quality Division. Our capital budget is covered by these two divisions. I provided a fairly large packet of information earlier to the committee members, and perhaps a word of explanation as to how our project list is put together would simplify things in the long run, perhaps result in less questions. I will speak to the facility construction operation portion, then Jim will follow with the EQ portion. On the facility construction operation programs, we have two programs, Village Safe Water and our 50% municipal matching grants program. Each fall, we send out questionnaires to all the communities in the state and solicit from them their list of priority projects. We take those projects and rank those according to a set of criteria which include public health, environmental protection, ability to build the projects, ability to maintain the projects, and other criteria which are enumerated in, I believe it's in the last handout in your packet. From that, we prepare a ranking of projects. The Village Safe Water list was about $61 million worth of projects, and the municipal grants, 50% matching.
Final hearing on the governor's capital budget, House Bill 561. And today we are going to begin with Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. Then we'll go on to the Departments of Community and Regional Affairs, Corrections, the
University. Set a target for us. We go down that list as far as the dollars carry and draw a line below the last project on that list. We were told by OMB this year that the department had approximately $25 million to distribute between our various capital budget requests.
Mm-hmm.
So in our request to you, we identified a list of projects which are identified in a March 6th memo to Shelby Stastny, which is the second item in your packet. That list identifies the projects for both Village Safe Water and the Municipal Matching Grants Program. By going down those priority lists that I mentioned earlier and drawing a line below a number that matches the dollar figure that were allocated by OMB. Doing that, we came up with a list of the totals slightly over $23 million. There is backup in your packets for each of these projects that we have identified, describing what those projects consist of, whether there's matching funds available from the federal government, whether it's a phased project, or any other information regarding the details to it. Unless you have specific questions, I don't propose to go into each of those projects in detail, and if you do have questions, we'll be happy to try to get you the answer to them. But the backup sheets that are in your packet on each of the projects should provide the data that you need. That, in a nutshell, is the way we prepared our budget. There are one anomaly, or in fact, two anomalies in here. Under the Village Safe Water Program, you'll see that the first item is $338,500, which is administrative support and is a CIP receipts to operating budget for the Village Safe Water Program. That is primarily travel and personnel costs to administer the program in rural areas. The other anomaly is in the Municipal Matching Grants Program. At the end of that list, you will see Anchorage, Juneau, and Fairbanks are identified with unallocated project names. And the reason for that is based on precedent in prior years with the legislature. Most of the Juneau, Anchorage, and Fairbanks projects would rank fairly low in our priority ranking compared with projects or communities that have a newer infrastructure development process. So what we have done at the request of these communities is just put in a dollar figure for those communities and allow them to identify during the course of the year which projects they would prefer those dollars be assigned to. So that's the way it has happened in the past, and we have proposed to do it again this year at your discretion. And I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have in the preparation of this list.
Okay.
Are there any questions? Representative Brown?
It looked to me like Kodiak was skipped. You're marching down the list, and I was just wondering if there was any reason for that.
Madam Chairman, Representative Brown,
Maybe I hadn't all this. I was actually looking at your originally submitted backup.
I believe Kodiak was the next project that we had now before we ran out of money, but let me take a look. I remember it was a large ticket item. It was about $8 million project. Yes, Madam Chairman, Representative Brown, going down our priority list for municipal grants, Haynes is the last project prior to showing the unallocated projects for Anchorage, Juneau, and Fairbanks. The next project would have been Kodiak for $8 million plus, and given the limitations on the dollar figures that we were told were available, there was no way to stretch it into Kodiak, even if you did not fund Anchorage, Juneau, and Fairbanks. That list, Madam Chairman, should be in February 19th.
Any questions? Okay, would you please continue?
Mr. Powell will pick up the EQ section of the project list.
My name is Jim Powell. I'm Deputy Director, Division of Environmental Quality, and I'll go over the last, as I see it, last four items there. The first one, community hazardous waste storage and transfer facilities, $761,000. Basically, it's to establish those transfer facilities. That basically takes the household hazardous waste out of the stream and provides a location and an opportunity to deal with those wastes and takes it out of the dumps. Makes it affordable for those communities to do that, and reduces in the waste stream itself and possibly for recycling, takes that stuff out. So we propose to do that with setting up those stations.
Now, will there be fees generated
to do that? I'm not sure. I can get back to you on that.
Representative Brown.
This is a brand new activity for the state, is it not? I presume from this write-up that the department's going to operate these facilities?
Well, to your first question, it's a new funded activity directly, like in Juneau now. We're actually doing some of that right now. We're helping the community to locate some of that waste, and actually we're temporarily storing some of that. So it's not a new activity, but it's a new funded activity to do just for this. Okay, in some of the communities.
We've had a lot of discussion in the DEC subcommittee about the department's direction and the commissioner's stated intention to develop a hazardous waste disposal site somewhere in the state, and there are, you know, a lot of questions about whether that's a good idea or not. But I don't see where you have the direction or the authority or the wherewithal to go into the business of operating one of these storage and transfer facilities. I mean, the one in Anchorage is expensive and extensive, and I'm just surprised to see this in here, and I'd like to see a lot more about it.
Okay.
What do you have in mind?
Madam Chair, Representative Brown, this is for non-regulatory hazardous waste. There's a distinction there between, I think, the discussions that you've had about setting up sites for regulatory, it's just for hazardous, household hazardous waste, ones that aren't regulated under RCRA. So I think there's a distinction there. Are you still confused? You're still...
Okay, so you're going to pick up household hazardous waste, say, in a small community, and then what are you going to do with it? I mean,
we're going to take it out of the waste stream, depending upon where it's located, Kenai, and I believe we haven't established those locations yet, and I can get those locations if we have. It's to take the stuff that's not regulated out of the streams, and then to provide for it. Some of it's recyclable, for example. used oil, for example, those kind of materials. I can get more backup information.
Okay, I'll just, if you would provide more backup on the whole.
Locations.
How are you going to operate it? Is it contracts? Is it people? What is it?
Okay.
And how can you build a facility for $761,000?
Okay.
Because this backup indicates there's multiple facilities envisioned.
And who will operate?
There's more than one, I think, that's envisioned. So the fees where.
Who will operate it?
Okay.
What exactly do you anticipate spending the money on?
Locations.
Okay, will do. Number two on the list, $265,000 for water quality assessments. This is for contractual funds, which will develop a database that can be used for forest practices inspections, basically to get us upgraded to integrate some of our data in-house for monitoring. So it's monitoring data that we're trying to get. Forest practices inspections, our Alaska Volunteer Water Watch program, the data that we get from that, we need to get a database going on that, also for placer mining inspection programs. The next one, $110,500, automated vehicle inspection certifications. 65 of the Department of Motor Vehicle workstations will be kind of automated with the barcode, so we can correlate our data between those stations and the inspection centers, and that's what that $110,000 would do. And then $307,000 for analytical equipment, and I'll break it down. It breaks down into three different areas. $90,000 for a gas chromatograph to do analysis of DDT and other chemicals that would be in, that we're trying to find and detect in drinking water. $73,000 for a multi-parameter submersible probe. I can't tell you exactly what that is, but I can tell you what it does. It samples water, again, for drinking water, and to be used in forest practices, again.
Didn't we fund a new lab and equipment?
Yes, but this would be, Madam Chair, you're correct, we did. But this is an instrument that could be taken into the field, mm-hmm. and put in the water. So it's a field instrument. Any other? Okay. $108,000 would also be used. That's the last part of that $300,000. High-pressure liquid chromatograph. And that's to measure new pesticides,
mm-hmm.
Or I should say pesticides that are now regulated. And that's it.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Representative Brown? On that analytical equipment, this VHF data telemetry project, that's still part of it, right?
Where are you getting that from? Excuse me.
I'm getting it off the new OMB revised explanation of the difference in what you will and won't be doing, you know, based between your request and the governor's submission.
But the question is whether that's still included in this request, that's part of the equipment, or has it been dropped?
I get it from this that it is included. Is
okay,
that correct?
I'm not sure. I'll have to check.
I have questions about that whole, what is that, why are we doing that?
Okay.
What did the ISPRC say about that?
I don't know. I'd have to check.
Okay.
The question again is, Representative?
What did the Information Systems Coordinating Committee think of that idea? And if we could go back to the water quality database, who is that being coordinated with, or is that a standalone database?
That's to be used, well, it's contractual funds to get that going. That'll be used just in our department. It'll be used just in the water quality section. It's to get a database to for monitoring and all the stuff that we're bringing in from the Alaska Volunteer Watch and a couple other programs. We don't have that capability in-house right now.
Here's another one, Madam Chair.
Madam Chairman, if I may elaborate on that, that is being coordinated through the Water Management Council, so DNR would have access to the same data. It's not a standalone system that's only available for one department.
What mechanism is, well...
In fact,
I think we're going to have some more discussion about all these mm-hmm. data projects.
The data projects.
That's
Representative Ulmer.
Just one quick question back to the hazardous waste storage and transfer facilities. How much of that is the proposal from the Southeast Conference for a sort of moving waste collection system, like a van on a ferry or whatever? I've forgotten what the original proposal was. How much of that is for the Southeast Conference proposal?
I don't know.
Okay.
I can't tell you, but I can tell you that... Well, I could give you more information about that project. That's through an agreement program with the department and the Southeast Municipal Conference. And, yeah, we're real excited about that program. I can get the figures exactly.
Okay.
That you didn't.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Thank you very much. Our last committee will be Department of Community and Regional Affairs. Okay, this will conclude our hearings for today. We'll start with Department of Transportation tomorrow.
Lawyer Navarre, Jacko. First bill we're going to have up is House Bill 411. We're on a teleconference, listen-only teleconference, so members, if you have questions or comments, please speak into the teleconference mic. We have a couple of people who wanted to testify on the bill.
Which one? Who's that, Martin?
Start with Representative Martin.
Which bill, Mike?
What's that?
Which bill?
411.
411.
All right. Where is Martin? Martin's not here. Okay, well, how about Brian Rogers? Okay, a note for the record that members present are Charles Phillips, Larson, Barr, Boyer, Copen, and Jacko.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Brian Rogers, I'm Vice President for Finance for the University of Alaska System, and I'd like to express the University's support for House Bill 411 and discuss in particular Section 5 of the bill, beginning at the bottom of page 3, the buyout of the Cape Suckling timber. The University's support of this legislation is part of a package agreement that the University has come to with the plaintiffs in the case against the Department of Natural Resources and the University over transfer of three timber parcels in the Gulf Coast area. This agreement will allow harvesting of timber beginning this summer at the White River and provides for the buyout of the Cape Suckling parcel. So we have both an opportunity for development of some timber resources and then conservation of timber for other values as a part of this. Secondly, this provision provides that nearly 20% of this bill will be, as the governor has suggested, placed in an endowment fund, because the funding from the sale of university assets that are trust assets all go into a trust fund for the university. This endowment fund, then the income from that endowment is used for natural resource related projects at the University of Alaska, supporting agriculture, forestry, fisheries, and other projects. The section is a fairly long and complex one. It's the intent of the parties to this, that the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council, the City of Yakutat, the University, others that have worked on this, that this provides a framework for agreement under a statute you passed 2 years ago, Chapter 143 of SLA 1990. Under that bill, there's an area plan. It does provide for this buyout, and it's our intent that this would not affect either that area planning or the litigation process. We believe that the amendments made in the House Finance CS will make this a little bit simpler. The amendments do provide for a moratorium on the development of the parcel itself. We set up an appraisal process, and by using on page 4, line 10, the process for appraisal and repurchase developed under the law 2 years ago, we will speed the process and simplify things, because the university and the department have already developed the necessary crews and engineering information and the appraisal instructions for this. The one defect, as it turned out, in the bill 2 years ago, it required the department and the university to each get appraisals and to negotiate, but there was no finality in that negotiation process. This provides that if we are unable to reach agreement on two new appraisals, that we would go to a last best offer arbitration and then a binding decision by a mutually acceptable arbitrator. We believe that this section does meet the intent of the Exxon Valdez settlement money, that the money be used to compensate for equivalent resources, the Cape Suckling parcel. The most interest we've had at the university in this parcel has come at a hearing we held in Cordova, and I think the same people affected by the Exxon Valdez oil spill would see the benefit of that buyout. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be glad to answer any questions members may have.
I have a question. That is that I know there's an amendment being drafted to reduce the amount from $9 million to $6 million. Can you tell me what the impact of that would be?
About $3 million, Mr. Chairman. The problem is we do not know exactly what this timber is worth. The appraisals in the market 2 years ago ranged from $27 to $42 million. We believe that it's important that the maximum amount possible be placed into the down payment this year, in order that the remaining payments with interest as provided for this are reasonable over the term of the settlement. It's certainly ultimately the legislature's decision, but the original number of $9 million represents a third of the low value, the lower of the two appraisals, I think is the most reasonable number. Certainly it's up to the to this body to determine among competing priorities, but there may be other items that are lower priority than the Cape Suckling buyout if room needs to be made for other projects.
Representative Larson.
Thank you. I guess just a couple of real general questions here. We're on teleconference. How is the Cape Suckling area affected by the oil spill?
The Cape Suckling area itself was not affected by the oil spill. The people who rely on the Cape Suckling area for fishing and for subsistence purposes were affected by the Exxon Valdez oil spill.
Then in our packet here, it includes a memo that says the money paid in restitutions are to be used by the state of Alaska and the United States of America exclusively for restoration projects within the state of Alaska relating to the Exxon Valdez oil spill. And you said this meets the intent? If so, in which way?
Mr. Chairman, my understanding is that the payments are for the remedial and compensatory payment include restoration, replacement, enhancement of affected resources, and more importantly, acquisition of equivalent resources and services. And I believe it's in that second category, the acquisition of equivalent resources and services, that is dealt with by this particular portion of the buyout.
Well, it says restoration includes restoration, replacement, and enhancement of affected resources. but you just told me that wasn't affected in acquisition of equivalent resources and services. I don't know, do we have a legal opinion or something that to back up your statement on meeting the intent?
Mr. Chairman, in response, I do not have a legal opinion as to meeting the intent. Perhaps the sponsors of the bill who approached the university about this, the university felt that based on our reading of this being equivalent resources and services, we understood it to be within the intent. We have not done a legal analysis of that.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kopanen? Representative Ullman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In partial answer to the question that Representative Larson just asked about the resources do not necessarily mean the same land or same water area. They can mean the same fish, birds, animals, even though their habitat is close as opposed to the same as. For example, and I'll just read briefly from the material we were presented today from the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council, a direct biological connection exists between Cape Suckling and Prince William Sound. A recent study by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service discovered that over 1,000 bald eagles from heavily oiled western Prince William Sound migrate to Cape Suckling for the fall and winter coho runs. Preserving this food source at Cape Suckling is directly related to the restoration of bald eagles that were damaged in Prince William Sound by the oil spill. So even though it's an area that was not impacted by the oil spill, it is an area that provides habitat to the resource that was damaged by the oil spill. And I think that's the point that I'd like to make on the record for purposes of explaining the connection between this proposal and the areas that were damaged.
Mr. Chairman, I think now that I understand it, that the timber forests provide a place for the eagles to land so they can eat the fish that swim through the waters of where the oil spill existed on their way to Cape Suckling.
Something like that.
Okay.
How about geese on your way to the North Slope?
Mr. Chairman, if that's the intent of how the criteria will be set forth, that we decide on where this money would be spent, I think that possibly we ought to consider expanding the amount of money in this, or not the amount of money, but we ought to expand the number of projects in this bill considerably. And include projects that I guess view it as a capital projects bill and include projects throughout the whole northern parts of the state, because if we're taking into consideration the biological aspects of birds and the migratory patterns of birds, I know for a fact that in my district, in Bristol Bay region and Lake Eliamna region, there were a number of birds that had migrated through Prince William Sound. The oil spill was there and it picked up oil, and when they came out into the Lake Eliamna area, into the Bristol Bay area, they had oil on them. They deposited the oil into the waterways. Some of the people who subsisted off those birds up in the Bethel area and those areas had reported that the birds that they were subsisting off of had oil inside them, that they'd eaten oil-contaminated products or food from the Prince William Sound area. So I think with that line of reasoning that we ought to, in the interest of equity, we ought to reconsider all the projects that are in this legislation and maybe expand them so that it's a little bit more fair to represent all the needs across the state of Alaska.
I want my part too.
Yeah, anyone who wants to offer an amendment is welcome to offer an amendment. Further questions for Mr. Rogers? Rogers, thank you. Thank you. Representative Martin.
Yeah, Joe.
Mr. Chairman, my concern about this bill right now is has to do with the
Rent teleconference.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I'm here on behalf of District 13, but also on behalf of the whole state, and being concerned on how we spend our money and for what reasons. My major concern about this bill has to do with Section 6, which has to do with the Kashmik Bay Park. And ever since last year, when the appropriations failed I thought I'd take it on myself to get more involved and find out what down there. And as I become more involved, I found myself becoming more concerned as to what some experts in the field, for one reason or another, did not feel comfortable in letting us know last year. On Monday, I called Commissioner Hines because it was to my, it brought to my attention that there was supposed to be a commitment already made to sign a deed up in Anchorage with the parties pertaining to Catholic Bay Park. And then we found out that it wasn't so. It was just a matter of understanding the parameters of this particular piece of land in Alaska and for what reason we're buying it and what's the main value. I want to dissociate myself with the idea of, you know, do we need more parks or things like that? That's not my concern. My major concern, so, is the timber aspect. And it was with this in mind that some people who are professional people felt that this was one of the worst scams pulled upon the legislature in years to come. And, of course, I wanted to find out why. What were you talking about? Well, it had to do with the true value of the timber available. And I'm sure that you know how it ends up that the timber company who has that and whose president used to be the director of forestry now has the timber harvest rights of Catchmink Bay Park, which is minor. You know, he's an individual like anyone else. But the main thing is that if there's anyone who should know the rules and the laws of the state, it should be this individual who made some of those laws. And I think that it's up to this committee because you're going to end up, if not just passing this bill, you're going to pass many bills for the future. And most of the people are concerned about the 66-foot right-of-way, the buffer zones on each side of a stream or a river. You know, that has not been solved yet. And if we go ahead and buy Catchmink Bay Park...
Representative Martin?
Yes?
I just want to correct, first of all, the information that you've given out. Mr. Sturton does not own the timber rights.
I'd say he's president. Okay. The timber company that owns
That's owned by Native Corporations.
Right.
Thank you.
It says right here in Saldovia's letter, December 18th, that the timber rights are held by Mr. Sturton. What newspaper says that too? Timber rights owned by timber company with the president, John Sturgeon. So we say that company that he's president of. Okay. Anyway, the major problem right now has to be, if we go ahead and buy all the timber in this area that's available that they said would be harvested, then are we not making a commitment that we should buy all timber for all native groups, all private groups who have, by the law, been not allowed to harvest timber 66 feet within each side of the buffer zone of a river or stream? It's a very important question, I think. Because, as you know, in your area, there have been many articles last fall and this winter from throughout the Kenai area with the big argument, can the state tell us that we cannot harvest within these buffer zones? And if so, through eminent domain, will they pay us for our rights? And the reason why I'm concerned, because some of them in the papers themselves, this was just written the other day, are concerned about Catchmink Bay Park as being an example. If they buy that and buy that timber that is not as valuable, then are they going to buy my rights? And so I hope the department or this agency looks into that as a constitutional question. Here's another one from the business news of the Juneau Empire just recently. So many people are concerned about that. The Anchorage Times wrote an editorial also on the timber harvest right and the buffer zones. Can we at the state deprive these people who own the property, whether they be individuals or forest countries, companies or native corporations or what? But the Catchmink Bay Park is the one that's going to be looked into, like this one here from the Homer News, as either opening the door for the state paying for all the timber or not in these buffer zones. Timber trading, President John Sturgeon felt that, you know, it's the timber value that's important. And of course, he said it's the fishier habitat and the open streams, the clean streams, and stuff like that are important. And so that's the reason why they're selling the timber right at a smaller parcel. Part of the problem is, though, is that you have a lot of emotionalism going on with the people that you know in Houma that you represent. And so having gone down there, and I haven't received this picture from one of the ladies down in the area, and having looked at the maps that were given to me by DNR, experts in the field, chances of you seeing what they're going to say is harvestable is very little. According to them, it's not of that elevation. So why are we worried about the aesthetic part of it? Because, you know, if you can get some people to use all the emotion available naturally to prohibit timber from my view, whether a mile from now or 2 miles from now, then do it.
Representative Mark,
you're ready to talk.
If you have someone from the department who gave you that information or who suggested that, I'd like to have them come before the committee because they're wrong.
Yes, sir. If I may. And that's what I expect to Mr. Commissioner. And there's a lot of people in this state that are good people, honorable people, but they know when to shut up. They know when their job's available. And they know the territory better than you or I who get it third link. I'm acting as an instant expert because I think what they say about this area and as far as the eligibility of it being harvested is correct. It's their maps. So I'll be glad to leave these with you, sir, to show the elevation of these areas. Both of them. So you have a typographical map as well as a visual map. Give you a clear sight of what will be harvested, what can be harvested, and at what price. Here's the reason why, you know, I'll, on behalf of them right now, give you this information. I hope your agency, your department here, does a true evaluation. And perhaps make it clear to Commissioner Hines, as I try to, you've got good people who are truly concerned, sir, but for some reason or other, they don't feel they can come out and tell what they feel like. DNR's report after last year tells us, I have a report here from them recently, about the beetle infestation. We were told last year there is none. But during the summer, we report from them that there is beetle infestation in that area. We're buying dead trees, much less trees that wouldn't harvest in the first place. I guess the most important thing, sir, in here right now, is the letter that Siberia Native sent out to all of us. And so I wrote some of the questions here because they knew I was involved, and Mr. Surgeon came and talked to me too. So it's no secret with him and I what I feel concerns about, although he didn't have a lot of the answers. Number one, if you're really going to harvest this land, where's the bill cut it? Who said that they're going to buy it from you? There's nearby area, English Bay especially, that had been harvested to some degrees, but the last time that area was harvested, it cost them, it took them about 2 years before they finally got a buyer from Korea, and the Native Corporation lost over $2 million clockwise. But they had to get rid of it. The woods were getting worse. But they used that, experts in the field, to tell me that the trees in this area are even worthless. It's less quality. Just recently in yesterday's paper, an 88-year-old man, I'll read these with you, made it clear that that land, this timber, I wouldn't even think about cutting, said an 88-year-old Houma resident in disgust. It's absolutely not worth a blank of timber, and I've worked a lumberjack for over 30, since 1930. Then this is just the other day, April 20th, paper. And I want to bring this out, sir, because I want the whole group here, you're responsible for how much money, and I'll leave these with you to say, is it worth our money? Is it worth $4 million, $2 million, or nothing?
Did the 88-year-old man happen to be a timber assessment expert?
Well, let's see. I don't know. He's 88 years old. He's been in the business since 1930. And if you call that an expert or an amateur, I don't know. You'll have to ask him. I'm sure he's won your consistence. I'll leave this article with you.
Thank you.
But I won't give his name. It does say his name here. Anyway, so it's those kind of people, so who are in the know. And for my area, I know that you're in a tough situation because it's your area. But all of us do have a responsibility of seeing how much value this is. I was told to talk to one of the governor's people the other day, and I did talk to them. And they said, well, we heard about the helicopter bit, and they're not going to do helicopters anymore because you're right, it's too costly. But instead, we're going to put roads in there. The very person who's doing his directorship of the forestry department who objected to any roads in that area And Amos Bay, you know, did put roads on the other side where it was possible for a hard surface. But in this area here, to suddenly use that as an excuse, that all they need is permits. You can't put permits in that area. So soft and so boggy, so what? That we can't accept the excuse that they're going from helicopter now to roads. The most important thing is, why don't we see if he's even got a buyer? Once he has a buyer, then we may consider paying for it. But people tell me no timber people do any harvesting, and they don't put the resources together until they got a contract, a commitment, a letter of credit. And here we are just paying the guy and said, well, we think it's $6 or $7 million. We'll give you 4.5 for it. I'm not sure if I'll give him 1 cent, sir.
Representative Martin, the appraisal process that we went through on this is fairly extensive. Both DNR and Timber Trading Company went through an appraisal process for mm-hmm. the timber to try to determine what the value was, reached an agreement on what the value is, and then reached a settlement on what they would accept less than what the value of the timber is. So you can dispute it or say that you don't think it's worth that much, but unless you have some documentation that shows that their assessments were in error, I guess. Yes.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I agree with you, and that's the reason why I sent a letter. I think you got one, December 31st, 1991. Gives us some idea of what it should be worth, but at the same time, through these maps, and would you call some other people from forestry and private industry, and we have names here from private assessors in the timber industry, and I'd like to ask that maybe we get an independent evaluation, even from a person from Oregon and Washington. There's some names listed here that can give you an independent. There is a lot of concern about the true value and why in the world we're even paying for those timbers. And these are people that really want to help Alaska. They're not against the plight at all. I mean, they want to earn money just like the next guy. Most of them are in the timber industry. But when they feel there's a real ripoff going on, then they have the right to express it, except that they can't do it because of where they lie. And I wish we did have an open system. And I know you have met other people in government departments that just couldn't, for various reasons, speak out against what they thought was happening. But they'll give you the information, give you the leads, and then go from there. I know you've had the area assessed, but there's still a lot of people concerned about the objectiveness of those assessors. Anyway, I'll leave it up to you, sir, and then probably give the same speech on the floor.
Well, just leave that up to me. Thank you, Representative Martin. Are there questions for Representative Martin?
Mr. Chairman, for the purposes of further discussion, I would move that we adopt the CS for House Bill number 411 Finance. That's UTML 7LS1718G.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ford.
I asked one of the members of the subcommittee to consider an amendment on this bill, and it was told to me that I should go ahead and make a committee of the whole. As you know, once you adopt a committee substitute, it's a lot easier to pass and try to put an amendment on top of it. And frankly, I felt that at the time that was just not a fair way of doing it. But I will offer my amendment once the committee substitute is proposed.
Mr. Chairman, I was as the chair of that subcommittee. We did not change any of the dollars and cents in any of the other amendments adopted or proposed to be adopted and included in this working draft CS, and it was that yours was a substantial monetary shift that we didn't accept that, nor did we accept another amendment that had been proposed and I think will be proposed later by Representative Covina for the same reasons. We felt that those, because they did represent major shifts of dollars to new programs or different kinds of projects rather, that was more appropriately within the view of the full Finance Committee.
Is there a further objection to adopting the committee substitute? Without objection, we have the committee substitute before us. Representative Phillips.
Mr. Chairman, in your packet, you have a proposed amendment for $3.4 million. Just pull it out here for a second. to page 3, lines 28, which deletes 9 million, inserts 5.6, and then in section 29, the new section, to add $3.4 million to the Department of Fish and Game, Division of Fisheries, Rehabilitation, Fred Division, for a heated water pipeline to the Fort Rich Hatchery. I do believe we have somebody from Fish and Game here to talk. Anybody here from Fish and Game? Okay. About the technical aspect of it. But basically, what it is, it's doubling the water capacity for the hatchery at Fort Richardson for salmon as well as trout. And I have a letter that is from Fish and Game from April 1st, 1992, that they did unsuccessfully requested this money and was rejected. But I want to also state here in their letter, this increased production would provide an alternative lost sports fishing opportunities in Cook Inlet that are expected to occur in 1993 and 1994 due to the oil spill. Mr. Chairman, also, this would stock salmon in the Cook Inlet area. And I might want to add just in today's Anchorage Daily News, there was an editorial here, which I thought was, the timing was good. I'm going to read from that. Here, this, in today's news, spill years later, damage to plenty. They mentioned that two species of fish that feed in shallow water where oil may still bleed from bleaches are also suffering. Death rates for Dolly Vardens in areas hit by the spill were 32% higher than in clean areas. For cutthroat trout, the figure was 65%. Even pink salmon, whose record runs have been hailed as proof of recovery, tell a more troubling story upon further examination. The death rates for wild salmon and oil streams are triple those in unaffected streams, and the death rate has been increasing. And that's an editorial and from the news, citing some of the findings from that report. Mr. Speaker, or Mr. Chairman, I do believe that this is just a legitimate expenditure of the Exxon funds, and I even have to admit that I was a little disappointed once we got into the details about a month ago on this bill, because I honestly thought we were going to have $50 million to restore the Prince William Sound and the Cook Inlet area, and those areas are directly affected by the oil spill, and try to replace it as best we can, and meaning the fish, the birds, and the people there. Some of the stuff in here, I just don't believe. It's stretching the imagination, in my view of the world, to spend this money, tens of miles from the oil spill itself. But I do believe that this appropriation here has a direct linkage to the oil spill. Cook Inlet was affected by it, and so were the freshwater streams flowing into it. And I do believe it's a appropriate expenditure of the funds, and then if you have any technical questions, Fish and Game's here to answer them.
Representative Larson. Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess some of my questions here are a little bit more general than what Representative Phillips are. But as I review the projects that are proposed, I find that only about 21% of the total expenditures would be in Prince William Sound. About 35% is in Cook Inlet, Kachemak Bay. Another 18% is in Kodiak-Afognak area, with approximately 26% in other areas, principally Cape Suckling, the $9 million there. And I guess my concern is from that, how was the criteria selected, or who selected it? And as has the Attorney General come out with any statement stating that he has reviewed and that in his opinion these projects meet the criteria of the settlement as set. Because I think if we don't have that information, we may be leading a lot of people down a stream that we find eventually is going to lead to a lot of vetoes. And I think we should have the information on what the administration is thinking in regards to these projects so that we can make a more enlightened decision in regards to them. So if someone could tell me how come only 21% of these projects are located in Prince William Sound, and who and how were the selections made, I would feel more comfortable as we proceed here.
Jane, do you want to address it?
Thanks, Berkeley. My paper bag.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, the people of Cordova were interested in the Cape Slackline parcel and consider that to be equivalent resources and values that were lost during the spill, and consider that to be part of the Prince William Sound.
We're up to 30%
segment. And as to how the numbers were negotiated, it was discussions between the regions, sort of refereed by our office, but to a large degree, and we didn't try to make any value judgments on what the different regions wanted, how much they felt were fair. Every region, for one reason or another, felt that their portion was less than it could be. And in addition, there was about $4 million, which is 8%, which is region-wide out of that, that would be part of which would end up in Prince William Sound. So it wasn't a decision that was made by any one person. It was kind of a negotiated sort of agreement among the different regions.
If I may proceed then, in the resource committee, did we have any testimony from the Department of Law as to their interpretation of whether these projects met the criteria or not in regards to the settlement?
No, the resources committee didn't. We do have a memoranda from our attorneys, our legislative affairs attorneys. It's fairly unclear, since it's the judge who would be deciding the matter. And in theory, at least, any attorney reading through the documentation could make some value judgment, or an individual could make a value judgment about these things. It was kind of a mobile target, and so we didn't want to ask item by item for the Attorney General. We asked general questions of our own legislative legal counsel about what categories would fit. And I think those are in your packets.
See, Mr. Chairman, what my concerns are is that we can go through and approve a set of projects here as proposed, but if the administration is going to come back and say that they don't meet the criteria that's necessary and veto any or all of them out, well, they won't veto all of them out, but let's say they veto out half of them, that's $25 million. That means $25 million is going to sit there for another year, and it'll be at least that time then before we can reallocate those dollars to projects that meet the criteria. So I really feel we have to hear from the Attorney General's office in order to make a decision on these various projects as proposed for that reason.
Mr. Chairman, if I may comment, there's a couple of responses here. One, the money would simply go back into the pot.
Sure.
And the bill that's being pushed by the administration, the money goes into the pot for over 10 years. So we've gained nothing and lost nothing. As far as legal interpretation, we probably should talk to Judge Holland before we talk to the Department of Law, because they're the people who are going to say whether or not the educational fund is fits within the confines. And, excuse me, I had to run up here because I was trying to listen in on the other bill as it's heard as we speak here in Senate Resources. But another point that I think is very important to make, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Larson, is the fact that the bill you see before you came from the people. If ever there was a pot of money that the people got into and said, we, the affected people, we, the people who were damaged, we, the people whose livelihoods were canceled, literally canceled, this is how we feel this money, this $50 million, the closest that we'll ever get to any of this money from this bill-related areas, this is how we think it should be spent. And if there's nothing else that you remember from anything that I've ever said about this bill, this is the people's will.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Davidson, that's my concern too. I just want to make sure that the people who were really impacted are the ones that are going to receive some mitigation here, and make sure that it is in some area that hasn't been impacted, receiving dollars at the expense of some areas that was impacted, not receiving any.
And Mr. Chairman, if I may, that is the point about Cape Suckling. People from Cordova are the ones who agreed, in fact, to include that area in this bill. It didn't come from the sponsor. It didn't come from people in Southeast. It came from the people from Cordova, those who were impacted by that. I don't know how many people in Cordova fish in Bristol Bay, but the fact of the matter is, those are the people who said, yes, we think this fits the criteria.
Okay. If I may ask just some general questions, then along with that, we brought up Cape Suckling. That $9 million, is that going to be the total purchase, or is it going to obligate the state then for further dollars in future years?
I don't have the technical expertise on that question, Representative Larson, but please understand, too, that that $9 million represents in large part an endowment fund for the educational purposes for agriculture, especially at the University of Alaska.
Okay. How about the timber purchases on Fognak Island? Is that a partial purchase or is that a total purchase for those parcels?
The lands on Fognak Island are partial, but the Fognak area is a very special situation because the federal government has recently, in fact, funded a very large-scale study on those areas. Fognak Island was established as a forest preserve back by President Benjamin Harrison, the only Hoosier who has been president. But it will be not something that I think the state would have to worry about because it would be a situation where the trustee council may or may not decide to continue purchases. And the other note on that point there is that two-thirds of that area is non-forested.
Okay, so there is going to be some future costs. We just don't know how much yet or who's going to pay.
When you say future costs, you mean future acquisition costs?
Yes.
You mean, well, for the state of Alaska? I cannot answer that question. If we choose not to, no.
What do we have then if we choose not to? Have we met our goals or our needs? Or?
I'd like to have Mr. Nelson speak on that, if I could.
Maybe you could speak on, say, the Kakamak Bay purchase, too. Is this a partial purchase or a full purchase? What will we have?
Well, with regard to Fognak, one thing I want to mention is that 75% of a Fognak Island will be logged under the current scenario. If all these purchases and all the planned purchases that the trustees may undertake were completed, it would still be 75% logged. The native corporations on the island are all actively logging and will continue to all actively log. They would prefer not to log the entire island because that's partly their area for subsistence, but they basically have resources they need to cash out. This is an alternative to them. They're pursuing both federal and state level acquisitions at the federal level through the Resolution Trust Corporation, through maybe credits on oil drilling or whatever to trade to the federal government. They're also actively pursuing the $900 million that the trustees have, much of which will probably be available for acquisition. So there's 10 years worth of money that the federal and state trustees have available for acquisition along these lines. These are all, the acquisitions are all targeted on specific areas, but they weren't meant to be the complete package. They're meant to be a start on what the federal and state trustees should finish.
Do we have any information? What we have before us, of course, is the projects that fell into the $50 million. I'm sure there were other projects that fell out because it would have taken the total cost beyond $50 million.
Not much. Most of what was included in there is far less than what anyone wanted. What we did was convince any one group coming in to pare their request down so it would fit in $50 million. This bill started out at about 38 or 9, and gradually things were included in as we went along. And they were all meant to be people coming in asking for $1 million for a complete project. Were directed to discuss it with the other residents of their region and try to come up with a number that would get them moving along but not damage the overall structure of the bill.
I guess my last question would be then on some of these timber buybacks, when the state pays a partial amount that we're going to have a future obligation in future years then to finish the buybacks.
I don't, Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, that is not my understanding as far as this bill is concerned. The state would not have that obligation. The trustee council, the trustees on the council might choose to make those additional purchases as they gather additional public input as to where they would like, where the public, that is, would like those acquisitions to be done.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, we're going to take a 5-minute break. House Bill 411 and 566 will be held over until Monday, and we'll take up the capital budget in 5 minutes.
Yeah, 5 minutes.